Well, Pharaoh met with his top counselors in the morning, and they were silent until he spoke. And here's what he said: "What did I do?" That's right. What did I do? Israel had been the economic backbone of his country. And paraphrasing Exodus 14, 5 through 22, what's this that we have done? So he made ready his chariot and took his army with him, took 600 chosen chariots. They're scary, right? And he also took foot soldiers with him, it says. It took his army with him. And he pursued them, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and his army. And they overtook us, encamped at the sea, at Pi-Hahiroth, in front of Baal-Zephon. Now, I need to give you a little bit of background here, because this really happened, and give you some sense from what I've gathered about where the people were and exactly what was happening. So there was a trade route that went from Sukkot, the first stop along the way that Israel took, and this ancient trade route took our people all the way to near the headwaters of the Gulf of Aqaba. Now, I'm not going to get up a map or anything, that seemed a little too clinical, but if you could just imagine, you know how the Negev is, south of Israel, the Sinai Peninsula goes like this, and on either side there's a body of water. And so on this side, facing you, this is the Gulf of Aqaba, and here is, anyone know the name of the other gulf? Gulf of Suez, that's exactly right. And best evidence seems to be that Moses took the people back the way he had earlier traveled, when you remember that he escaped from Egypt and went to Midian. So by doing it on your side, here's the Gulf of Aqaba, and Midian is over here. And so he very likely took the people that way. And Pharaoh was approaching. But the problem was, at that point, and by the way, I should say this is a little bit south of Eilat, if you've ever been to Eilat before in Israel. So he approached the people. We're on the beach, and right behind us is a very steep, rocky, craggy way down, totally unfit for chariots. And so we read that he took his army with him, not just the chariots. And the suggestion that the author that I like, who I think is most knowledgeable about these things, he suggests that Pharaoh, who's an experienced warrior, said, "I'm going to do this. I'm going to create a pincer move where Israel could not escape." And so he sent his chariots a little bit north, and then sent them east to where the water was, the beach along the way, and he sent his chariots that way. But his foot soldiers, they would have the ability to come down this very precipitous, rock-facing, and a very difficult last several hundred yards as Israel was approaching the ground, and they went that way. So Israel could not escape. There was no escape, because we might have hoped, and my guess is this was the hope of Moses, that he could go over to the head of the Gulf of Aqaba and could just cross over the top. Not over water, just over land. But here he was hemmed in with the soldiers behind coming down the hill and Pharaoh coming the other way, and there was literally no escape for Israel at that point. So we need to get a handle on this because this is really tough. Well, it's at that point, of course, you know the story, that the shofar was blown, a warning, and what's that? And behind them, they see the soldiers, and at some point, I don't know exactly in the chronology of how it might have happened, but they get word that there were chariots coming from the other direction. And then God supernaturally protects Israel from the encroaching army and chariots with the pillar of fire, which burns all night. And then it says this, that the Lord said to Moses, "Why do you cry to me?" Bit of a rhetorical question. Why do you require to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward. Well, there's nowhere to go. You can't walk north up the beach. You can't go back. The troops are behind you. There's nowhere to go. God says, lift up your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it. And the people Israel may go through the sea on dry ground. Well, Moses lifted up his staff, and he stretched out his hand over the sea. And at that time, a natural phenomenon, but the miracle here is the absolute amazing timing. It says, drove the sea back by a strong east wind all night and made the sea dry land. And the people of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry land, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. And the Egyptians pursued them and went in after them into the midst of the sea. All Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, his horsemen, everybody. Then the Lord said to Moses, as the people were going through, stretch out your hand over the sea when they make it to the other side, that the water may come upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots, and upon their horsemen. So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its normal course when the morning appeared. And as the Egyptians fled into it, the Lord threw the Egyptians into the midst of the sea. Now, we might ask, this is an epic trap, and God got us out of it at the 11th hour and 59th minute, and I have a midrash to share with you about this in just a few minutes. But how did it happen? Well, here's just a suggestion, and it didn't have to happen this way, but this seems to be the most plausible explanation. There's something called a water set down, and this is a known phenomenon, where a strong wind blows from the east and causes a difference in the level of the water. And if it's strong enough, it can really make the ground as if it is dry. You're able to pass through it. And so this is a suggestion how it occurred. And this is a phenomenon known. This is a known phenomenon in that part of the world. But I want you to get the miracle. I want you to get the miracle here. And God could have done it any way he wanted to, but it's just kind of interesting to speculate about how he might have used a natural phenomena here, natural phenomenon. But the main thing is that it happened at the very minute that we needed him. You got that, everybody? See that? It's at that minute when everything seemed lost, when you didn't know what you were going to do. We were hemmed in back and forth, and it was at that time, at the head of the Gulf of Aqaba. And so we have here an amazing, amazing story and truth. I call this moment, see if you agree, would you call this an oive moment for Israel? Oive, that means woe, woe, right? In Yiddish, I used to hear oive zmir. Maybe you've heard that in your own home, depending if there was Yiddish spoken in your home. But this strong wind blew, and the water set down occurred, and we were fine, and then the wind stopped blowing and all the water came back on Egyptian. Now, a lot of people feel that right now is something of an oy vey moment. Israel, Ukraine, Russia, the economy, the political polarization that we're experiencing. And I want to speak to that for you. Not talk about the specifics, of course, that's not what we do, but how we approach it. And the point of the matter is that it's during these oy vey moments that God comes through and he rescues. And that really is the big point. Now, I'd like to share a midrash with you from Exodus Rabbah 21:10. And a midrash is like a story built on the scripture that brings out a lesson. That's the idea of a midrash. So listen to this. The children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon dry land. How is this possible? If they went into the sea, then why does it say upon dry land? I mean, if you're going to go in the sea, you're going to get wet and the land is, you know, you're in the sea. If they walked on dry land, why does it say into the midst of the sea? It seems utterly contradictory. It's either dry or it's not. How could this be that they went into the sea and they walked on it in dry land? This is to teach that the sea was divided only after Israel had stepped into it and the waters had reached their noses. Only then did it become dry land. Now, this teaches a powerful lesson. Have you ever been in a situation where you were tempted to be immobilized by a big struggle and you had to step out, you had to move, you had to act? And when you acted, you found that God came through for you. You see, Stacy earlier on was talking about the nature of faith, and faith is not just an abstract idea, but it's something that you act on. And so that's very much related to what we're saying here. So I believe that for us, acting means choosing at this moment of history and all of the complexity and the sense of powerlessness that we could feel at a time when there were swirling and whirling forces that we don't quite understand, and who do you listen to on the news and who do you not, and all those very human things that we can experience at moments, at inflection points in history. And I would suggest we are in one to one degree or another. So here is one thing that I think is critical when we talk about how do we respond, how do we act, what do we do? Do we just curl up in a ball, in an emotional ball? No. That's not what we do. I believe God is calling us as a Messianic Jewish community to radical optimism. Let me explain what I mean by radical optimism. It doesn't mean naivete. It doesn't mean an intentional lack of awareness. It means that of all people, the remnant of Israel has the right to say, God, I don't know how things are going to work out, but I know that you are real. Do you know God's real? Me too. On the basis of objective evidence, on the basis of my own experience, on the basis of so many things. And having that knowledge and that faith and that commitment to him, and having watched him over the years get you out of jams. I've experienced it too. There have been Red Sea experiences. I call them oy vey experiences, right? And you've experienced them too. But he has been with you. Has he not? Yes or no? He really has. Even the stuff that you wish never happened, you can see how he's worked through it, because he always factors in human free will and doesn't make everything a bed of roses all the time. That's not his way. We don't have to justify that. We all know it. It's all the case. But I want to suggest that we should approach life with radical radical optimism. Let's move ahead enthusiastically despite apparent setbacks and uncertainty, whether it's at the level of the world, your family life, your personal life. And I want to suggest this. Let's build our best lives together, resisting the tendency to isolate and cocoon. Do you know what I mean by cocooning? It means that it can be a very great temptation during times of stress to say, I don't want to be with anybody. I just want to be myself. I don't want anyone saying Shabbat Shalom to me. I just want to be by myself because I'm mad and I'm confused and I just want to be by myself. And I want to tell you, it's the worst strategy. It is the worst strategy. It's at times of stress and uncertainty that radical optimism says, no, I am not going to go that way. I'm going to be with people, people who trust God, people who love me, people I can love, and I am not going to capitulate or give in to that tendency. So I want to suggest for all of us, let's stay close to God and Messiah Yeshua, because truly God is with us. Now I want to show you an interesting picture, and when we show it, I'll explain it, and then I want to read one more passage from the Besorah to help clarify this point. Okay, in 1962, when Marc Chagall, the famous Jewish, the most famous 20th century Jewish painter, moved to the United States, he completed this picture. This is called the Exodus. Now, I don't know if you can see it clearly, but there's a huge throng of people. Who do you think the people are? Us leaving Egypt, right? And then in the bottom right is Moses, although some have interpreted that it's Chagall putting himself in the picture. And artists can do that. It's kind of stylized. But I think it's Moses, because there he is with the Aseret Devarim, the tablets, right? And he's there. But who is right center leading everyone forward? It's Yeshua. Now see, it's hard to know exactly what Chagall is seeking to mean here. Maybe he's saying that the people are leaving Egypt with Yeshua in the sense that the Jewish people have been so often crucified as he was. That's a reasonable interpretation. But I think from our point of view, we could suggest that at some level he had something else in mind. Yeshua was with us at the Red Sea, and he has always been with us. And he is with us right now, and he's with you, and you, and you, and you, and me, and everybody, all of us, because he is our King, and he loved us so magnificently that he was willing to have the ultimate oive moment, his death, his terribly cruel death. Here he was, the one who was the instrument through whom God made everything, and he's being killed by elements in his own creation. Now, I want to leave you with this passage as we close. For I am sure, and this is Rav Shaul speaking, for I am sure that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Messiah Yeshua, our Lord. Pesach begins tonight. Tradition teaches us that all Israel was present at Sinai. So, see yourself at the shore of the Red Sea. Though the chariots and soldiers can seem to be coming from all directions, we move ahead. And even despite the rising water, the answer comes and God leads us through. This is a Pesach lesson we all need today. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.